Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 50, recorded July 7th, 2010. It's full of numbers, and that can't be good. This Week in Google is brought to you by Go to Assist Express. If you're in tech support, save time and money by supporting your clients and colleagues remotely with Go to Assist Express. For a free 30-day trial, visit gotoassist.com/twig. And by Slingbox. Watch your favorite TV shows when you're away from home with Slingbox. To find an in-store demo at a Best Buy near you, visit slingbox.com. It's time for Twig, This Week in Google, the show that covers the Googleverse and the cloud, and our great hosts who really make this show as smart and useful as it is. Starting to my left with Gina Trapani of smarterware.org. Hi, Gina.
Hi.
Great to see you again.
Playing with my Nexus One.
Are you?
I am. I'm setting up something we'll talk about this episode.
Froyo. We got Froyo.
Oh, yes.
Official
Froyo.
Yes. Jeff Jarvis got his Froyo, too, from BuzzMachine.com. Professor of Journalism at the City University of New York. It got pushed to you, eh?
Finally, Saturday morning.
Yep. I got mine Friday night, so yeah.
Yeah, Saturday night.
Yeah. So for those who don't yet have 2.2 on their Nexus One, you'll get a message. I presume everybody does, but you'll get a message that says there's a system update. You don't have to go check every 5 minutes.
You know what? I didn't get the message.
You didn't?
And then I went to check because I'm just neurotic and have no life. And that's when it said, oh, it's been downloaded.
Oh.
We'll install it now.
Huh.
Cool. Yeah, I got the dialogue box of the cute little robot.
Yeah.
You want to do Android?
So now that we all three of us have, I guess it's FRF91 is the official release. What do you think? Are the reviews in, Jeff? You like? Have you noticed a speed difference?
I haven't played with enough stuff. I mean, it seems a little faster. I'm just happy I have it. But you know, it's the kind of letdown once you yell for it for edit. You say, okay, what's the big deal?
Yeah. I have to say, it's little things though, like having the phone icon and the browser icon always there, which means you could pull it off your screen, and those are the things that you really do want always there. Little things
Definitely.
Like that. The speed.
Definitely. Yeah, it's much faster. That dock is great. I don't know how I lived without portable hotspot. Like I've been traveling a lot. So I've had, I had the test build and I use it all the time now. You know, just pop it up, make a hotspot, especially traveling. So I have to pay the $12 in the airport, whatever.
And still no word from T-Mobile about whether they want to charge for that. I mean, AT&T now has tethering. Sprint has tethering. But both cases, they charge you $20 to $30 extra a month. It's so far, we don't pay for this. It's just part of your bandwidth.
Yeah. And I mean, I haven't used, gigabytes and gigabytes. I literally just kind of use it, just a little bit here and there on traveling, but I haven't had a problem at all and I haven't seen any effect on my bill. So I'm just going to not say anything. Be happy. be happy while we can. Love
you. Well, T-Mobile's, in that position where they really do want to make people happy because they're kind of an also-ran network. Yeah. They've been upgrading their 3G network in New York. Have you noticed that yet, Jeff? Higher speed uploads or downloads?
Not really. I've been out in the burbs pretty much, and I get no coverage at home.
Zero. Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Are you tempted by the iPhone 4?
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Are we going to switch back? Are we?
I don't know.
We put so much pressure on. Let me let you off the hook. I'm using the iPhone 4 right now.
Oh.
Sad robot. What's your thought, Jeff?
Well, my thought is that I'll cancel my AT&T laptop card.
Right.
And use that to pay for keeping the T-Mobile because, it's a business expense for being on This Week in Google.
Google. And, yeah, right. You got to review the phone. And with the, $60 plan, it's not a whole lot more than a MiFi, for instance. It's the same.
No, it's not. Right. And I do still use the Android for my mail and everything. I prefer the Gmail client there. I like it better.
Here's what
I did touch I saw Clayton Morris at Fox, and I touched the X, the Verizon Droid X. It's nice.
Yeah, big screen.
He thought the screen was too large. I liked large because I'm old.
Well, and it's not. That's not the only one. There's also now, and T-Mobile has one of these, the Galaxy S Android phones, and these have a 4-inch. So they're in between the Nexus One and the extra large screen of the Droid X or the Evo. They're 4-inch screens, and they're these new Samsung AMOLEDs, which are supposedly just incredible, and they're kind of thin. The T-Mobile one does not have a slide-out keyboard. There are versions with a slide-out keyboard. It's a whole line of Android phones from Samsung that people are also raving about. So there's some good choices. But I have to say, I like having 2.2, which you can't yet get on any other handset legitimately. I like the slimness and the form factor of the Nexus One. It's small. It's easy to carry. And I have to say, now having carried around the iPhone for a couple of weeks solely, I do miss Google Voice integration. I miss that hugely.
Yeah.
I don't even know how to, I mean, on the iPhone, all my messages are in Google Voice, and I can't even figure out how to get them. You know, it's like, well, what do I do? I have to go online? What do I do? And then I also miss the better notifications that Android offers. It just does not work very well on the iPhone still. So there are some legitimate reasons to say stick with the Nexus One. Tethering is free.
Right.
I think while the screen is not as high res as the Retina display, it's the next best screen out there. Google Voice integration, notifications. What else? Are there any other things?
Morals, ethics,
open. It's open.
Making Gina happy.
Yeah, actually, that's the only reason that that Jeff and I use it, Gina. It's because of you. We just want...
I like the widgets. I like home screen widgets.
I do too.
I never thought I'd say that because I'm not much of a widget or gadget gal in general. But now I love the search box kind of front and center, which you have on the iPhone. But I use the Mint widget. I use the Pandora widget. I use the power widget where you can toggle on, you know, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, brightness really easily. I use the news widget. I mean, I've just got widgets. I've got used the Foursquare widget. So I really like that. You know, so this your phone's just not just like grid of...
Show us your home screen. This is one thing I miss on the iPhone is the ease of taking screenshots. You're going to have to tilt it a little bit because of the glare.
Yeah.
You have a lot of icons in your home screen. You're not heavily widgetized.
Not too much. That's that one.
I only have one row of widgets.
I don't want to show you my
screen.
Mint widget because it shows my net worth.
I know. I know. In fact, I'm kind of amazed that you have your Mint widget on there. I tried it for a while. And I thought, wait a minute. Do I want to broadcast that number?
Yeah, it's personal. Well, this is the thing. I have it onto a screen off to the side.
Yeah.
So you kind of have to really dig into my phone to see it. But yeah, I've got one page that's just widgets. You know, the search box, the power widget, the Mint widget, and then the Pandora widget.
And I use the Buzz widget, which I like.
Mm-hmm.
The camera in the iPhone is a little bit better, but the Nexus One's camera's pretty good.
Have you tried any video editing on the iPhone yet?
Yeah, it's hard to do with your little fat fingers. And they just shipped an update that might fix it, but there were a number of bugs and crashes. But they just shipped out 101 of iMovie.
Does that update have the more bars?
Not yet.
it's my theory of Spinal Tap. They're going to have 11 bars.
Goes to 11.
All the time.
My phone goes to 11. Yeah, they said the fix for the antenna issue is we're going to... We talked about this a lot on Twitter and other shows. I don't want to belabor the point, but we were stunned, says Apple, stunned to learn that we've been doing it wrong for the last three phones. We've been showing you too many bars.
You are hypnotized. Yeah, you will believe anything we say.
Does it on the face of it seem like they're kind of saying we were misrepresenting the figure at first?
They definitely were. And what, AT&T did a whole ad campaign around bars, right? I mean, this whole bar indicator is kind of a human... users can, you know, expect it now, right? But it's really like you either drop the call or you don't drop the call. It's more binary, which is what you were talking about on Twit.
This was Jerry Pornell. His point was it either works or it doesn't work. What's with the bars? Just a light that says you have a connection or you don't. That's all they need.
Right. You know, I had a reader write me and say that he could make the Nexus One lose bars if he put his finger on the bottom right of the phone. And I'm actually able to reproduce that.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. So, I mean, every phone has this issue. So we'll give Apple kind of, you know, the pass on that. Maybe not the pass on exposing the antenna. But yeah, their response was was funny. We're stunned.
We're stunned. Oh, we were shocked. It reminds me so much of Casablanca. I'm shocked. Claude Rains, I'm shocked that gambling is going on. Here's your winnings. Here's your winnings. I am shocked.
So one of the stories in the pile today is there will be no Nexus 2.
This is a surprise.
Yeah, it is.
Well, maybe not as much a surprise because they've kind of been leading up to this. They said a few weeks ago they weren't going to sell it. Google was going to stop selling it directly. Did they say why no Nexus 2?
Just kind of they didn't need it, that the Nexus 1 did its job and taught them all these lessons and it set a standard, and that's fine, and now we move on. You know, well, I guess, you know, they learn businesses they're not good at, even Google.
I am reading an Android. It's funny. Times change so fast. We don't remember 6 months ago, but I'm reading an Android book that came out in January, and it kind
you
of made
all the fun, Leo. I think I took a little time back, time off. And I'm going to read an Android book.
An Android book. Well, I'm sure Gina's doing the same thing. It's an Android programming book. But
they move too fast. You can't get a book. Things have changed by the time it publishes.
Exactly. This is the first one. It just came out that has 2.0 in it, right? But what they say there is, between the G1 and these other, and they really were mostly talking about the Droid and the G1. And it's different, and they were kind of celebrating the fact that Google was going to put out a phone with a kind of a Google Android experience that would then be set the standard. Then we still don't see those phones. You know, when you get it from HTC, you've got HTC Sense. When you get it from Motorola, you've got Blur on top of it. Even this new Samsung has some Samsung, you know, sugar on top of it to make it look like a different from the Google experience. And that is one reason why I kind of want to stick with the Nexus One. It is at least kind of a pure experience.
Yeah, I really like the Nexus One. I'm sad about the no Nexus Two.
Well, Droid X, anyone?
Yeah.
But then you have the is it the Moto Blur?
Good news, bad news. You have CDMA, but you have a network that works.
Yeah, exactly.
You have a network expensive network, but it's a network that works.
Right. It is a tough one.
It is.
So Google acquires ITA. What is the meaning of this? $700 million to basically buy a database that they were leasing before.
Well,
yeah, ITA is the airline booking company, yeah. Right?
So in the past, that airline data has been available, I guess, by rental. Mm-hmm. But now Google owns the data. Is this a response to Bing?
I think it's a response to a business opportunity. I think that it's a huge transactional area. It's probably the biggest e-commerce area there is, travel. I don't know how much advertising they get from airlines. Are they going to piss off the airlines by competing with them? Are they going to make the airlines happy by giving them business? Marissa Meyer, I'm trying to look for the clip now, made some reference to being able to create new kinds of searches, like, how far can I get for this much money in 7 hours?
Ah. Yeah, that's what she says. She says, we anticipate being able to build in some flight search capabilities in terms of flight tracking and in terms of being able to buy particular flights. Where can I get within 7 hours and within this price? But can't they do that by renting the data?
Well, they don't do it at all right now. I mean, they send you over to, you know, Priceline or somewhere else if you do a search. But you're right, though, Jeff, when you say it's a business.
Yeah.
Possible. It's more than just adding to their search because
I'm looking at
who their clients are. The airlines use it. Kayak uses it. Bing uses it. This is the ITA database. Orbitz uses it. Hotwire uses it. So they may make money, is what you're saying, even though it was $700 million.
It's like when Nokia bought, Navtech?
Right. They bought the map.
It's a similar kind of core data. Google has to be careful not to get in antitrust trouble, but that's where the thing makes its money, is by still serving all those companies. I think the question is, what can they do on top of it?
Reading an article from Clint Bolton's Google Watch and eWeek, he quotes Eric Schmidt on the call when they announced the deal on July 1st. I think it's unlikely that anything we do with this data will look anything like what's available today. So it sounds like a new product maybe from Google. Marissa Meyer says, we anticipate being able to build in some flight search capabilities. This is what you were talking about in terms of flight tracking and in terms of being able to buy particular flights. The quote that you used, where can I get within 7 hours and within this price? That is exactly what Bing does right now. It's what Kayak does. It's what other companies do as well.
This Google Alerts idea for travel is interesting. If you search yesterday for a flight, which is about to sell out today, you get an alert.
Oh, I like that.
That's sweet.
So you know, oh, there's a seat left. Go. Does anybody want to? Okay, I'm not exactly footloose and fancy free. Neither are you, Jeff. But maybe Gina, would you ever make a search for, I got this much money and I got 7 hours. Where can I go?
You know, I really want to be a kind of person who does that type of thing.
That's a bizarre search.
Go ahead, Gina. Go ahead. Search now. Go
you're somewhere. Young. You're footloose and fancy free.
Ride your bike to the airport.
Go to Bora Bora. Like that.
I know. It makes me feel like I should be acting a little more. But, you know, Kayak did that thing, kayak.com/explore, where it would kind of give you possibly places that you could travel right now. I kind of look at it again, but I remember looking at it and I was like, I swear I almost booked a flight to Hawaii.
Really?
'Cause I was like, I'm it's closed.
It's the equivalent of those recipe programs where you say what's in your refrigerator and it says what you can make.
Exactly. Right. Where can I fly for how much? There's a little slider. You say, I'm going to take off from Los Angeles. I've got, you know, $600 and I'm thinking about, you know, summer to 2010 or fall of 2010. So that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool just to kind of, you know, fantasize.
It's gimmicky, but it's cool.
It's gimmicky, but it's cool. But no, I generally don't say, where can I go in the next 7 hours for $500 or something.
I just wonder, because you hear these kinds of things all the time. People, and you know, you could get emails at last minute, you know, $50 flight. Do people really do that? Do they say, oh, good, let's go?
No, I mean, there was a business, what was it called, Last Minute, and it started in the U.K., they did that well because I think the UK and Europe has had the really cheap airlines. So you suddenly, you know, let's go to Croatia. It's only $10. And you can do that kind of thing. You know, our equivalent is let's go to Indianapolis. They'll pay me $10. no offense to who's
my here. Wife briefly in her youth was a courier. I don't know if you could still do this, but you used to, as long as you could drop of a hat, go somewhere, you would get a call in the morning that said, we need you to fly a courier bag to, you know, New York. And you get the bag, you have to be able to leave immediately, and then you get to be in New York for as long as you want, and you have a return flight. I guess if you're young.
That nowadays, a mule.
A mule, yeah. No, she didn't have balloons of cocaine up her butt. This was just it was like a courier bag. What are you talking? Actually, I don't know. I should ask. I shouldn't assume.
Those were the old days, Leo, yeah.
I shouldn't assume.
The other thing is, I had to fly to Montreal to do a conference about 2 months ago, and I couldn't believe how much the price was going up. And there's some arbitrage opportunity here that usually gets done on the empty seats one way, but I wonder whether there's another business opportunity here because the prices can go wacky. And if you really know how many seats there are available across the market, what new transparency can you bring to that market?
Right. That's a good point. This was the promise of the internet, friction-free commerce.
It sure ain't with airlines. Nothing's friction-free.
Perfect information makes you a perfect consumer.
Right.
And if you're a free market fan, you should love this because it makes the market work better. You know, supply and demand works better. It should.
Sure.
And the airlines, you're exactly right. They don't want anybody to know this because you could be sitting next to somebody who paid one quarter what you paid for that ticket, and they don't want you to know that because they know you'd be livid.
Though I argued that if they're making the real high end on those last minute tickets, this is exposed as utter stupidity. But I argued in my book, long time since I've made a plug, that at some point the airline would be wise to let us have an open marketplace in seats. Right. That's one time a friend of mine died of AIDS many years ago. And I my flight to Boston for his funeral was canceled and I was desperate to get to Boston. And they weren't going to do any buyout. So I said, I'll pay. You know, anybody want $100? They'll take your seat. $200. Take your seat. Nobody did.
Huh. An auction. It was like an auction.
Right. But at some point there's a marketplace there that if the airline, I mean, where this really goes, I think if you had an open booking system where you knew, look at it this way. Google's knowledge of the world comes from what we ask. Do we have the flu? Right?
Right.
What Google knows best, knows first. Right? So in this case, wow, a lot of people are searching for flights to X. Why don't we get to the point at some point where the airline says, oh, crap, I'm going to put on an extra plane. Or, oh, crap, nobody's going. I'm going to consolidate these and I'm going to do it early and I'm going to pay you for this and give you discounts. Right? Do you bring some... By having that Uber knowledge and analysis, can Google bring some sense to the marketplace. But then, of course, I always read too much into this. I thought that Buzz worked.
Yeah. So what do we know?
Yeah.
We're the fools that like Buzz.
I can fly to Yuma, Arizona right now for $230.
I'm
going to bet you could go to Indianapolis for less.
Yuma, I'd rather go to, well, Yuma might be a little hot right now.
Yeah, so, I bet it is.
Yeah, I think we should just stay right where we are, finish this show, which we'll do in a moment. But first, a word from Citrix.
Nice.
You like that?
Yeah.
Jeff Jarvis, Gina Trapani are here. We're talking about the Googleverse. And we have much more to talk about in just a bit. Before we do that, I do want to tell you about GoToAssist. If you're in the support business, whether it's personal, you know, you support family and friends, or you work in IT, or you have software that you support, you should know about GoToAssist Express. It is, you know, built on that great foundation, that remote access foundation that Citrix is so famous for. GoToAssist takes that and tools it for people in support. For instance, your supportees, your clients, or family or friends don't have to have it installed at first. They can be on a Mac or Windows, doesn't matter. Go right now. You can install it. You do need to install it first. GoToAssist.com/twig, and you can do it free for 30 days. Now, when they say help, you give them a link. That's all. And they go there. The software is installed. 30 seconds later, you're inside the computer. And by the way, you could set it up for unattended support, so they don't have to, you know, you don't have to wait till they're home. You can help them anytime, as long as they allow you to, obviously, for security reasons. It does tell you what operating system's on there, what security software, anything running in the background. You could drag and drop fixes or installs from your computer to theirs. And here's the best part for the busy support professional, eight systems simultaneously if you need to. Start and install on one, never wait. Go to the next one. It's just some really nice features. The best. 128-bit SSL, of course. So you can use it on an open Wi-Fi access spot, but you don't have to worry about that. It's completely secure. You can share your screen with your supportee, and if they want to show you what's going on, you know, you're seeing their screen. But if you want to say, oh, this is what it should look like, you could share your screen back. I can go on and on. I think you should just try it free. 30 days. Go to assist.com/twig. GOTO, assist.com/twig. 30 days free. You're going to love it. But I should really warn you, you're going to get hooked. And we thank Citrix so much for their support of This Week in Google. I can't read Hebrew, so I wasn't able.
Google can for you.
Do you read Hebrew?
No, I said Google can for you.
Google did a decent translation of this article, didn't it? It's a Calcalist, which is an Israeli, I gather, kind of like blog of some sort, financial newspaper sort of. They had an interview with Gaurav Jain, who is the Android product manager, and he confirmed for the first time that Google's music service will launch alongside of Android 3 Gingerbread holiday 2010. So now there's two things for you to demand, Jeff. Your Gingerbread and just in time for Christmas, or Hanukkah, and you can ask for Google Music. We're still waiting for the other shoe to drop with Apple. They acquired a streaming music service called Lala, and I thought by now they would have launched something. Though there are continual rumors that Apple is going to do a streaming iTunes service. Can Google compete with Apple in this marketplace? They really own right now. Apple does.
I mean, Gina, are you using your Android for and whatever that?
Let's ask the token young person.
Yeah.
Hey, token young person.
You know, the iTunes to Android transition was difficult for me. I spent years, I invested years into organizing my iTunes playlist, and I moved over to DoubleTwist, you know, which can import your iTunes playlist. But you know, DoubleTwist just it's good. It's not quite as good, and. Basically, long story short, I don't use my Nexus One as a music player very much. I'm using the Pandora on it right now, which I like. I would like to see better music capabilities in general. I think that media is one of Android's weaker points, and I hope that it gets stronger for sure. So I'm looking forward to this, but I got to tell you, Apple really has that down. for sure. As well as Google has the cloud stuff down, I feel like Apple has the media playback stuff down. So,
we were talking last week about the curation piece of this with the Google Marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
It's true somewhat, I think, with Apple too. It's partly seeing what they recommend. They've got an editorial function in the iTunes store,
which is exactly what Google has resisted doing. And as you said, we suggested they do this in the store. Do you trust Apple? I guess you do.
With music?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got good recommendations. Have you seen Groove Shark?
I'm not that groovy.
I play with it too much.
Yeah, I didn't know about it, but somebody sent me a playlist via Groove Shark. And the idea is you can listen to streaming music. It's free. I think it's legal. I think it's legal. It uses Flash, so it's not really very good for mobile. Although they do have a mobile. Oh, look at Android. Oh, look at BlackBerry, Nokia, Palm. They don't have an iPhone version, but they do have an Android version. So that's interesting. And this streams. This is streaming music.
Do you think that streaming is going to take over storing your MP3s on your phone's memory card?
Yes.
The thing is, I mean, you really have to have a good network. You either have to be on Wi-Fi or you have to have a strong 3G connection, really, for that to work well, right? I mean, I've been playing with the Pandora app, and it sticks. It hangs.
Does it really?
It takes
really?
A while. Yeah,
I get pretty good results on Android.
Huh. I assume that was just a matter of bandwidth. I was visiting family.
It is.
And on Edge network. You know, I didn't have a 3G.
Oh, you were on Edge. Yeah, it won't work on Edge, but it will work on a 3G fairly well.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I'm just trying to imagine going to the gym and, you know, bringing up my workout playlist, over 3G or the Wi-Fi.
I think the reason, well, here's the arguments for streaming. You've got the absolute argument against it. It requires, you know, significant bandwidth. The arguments for it, first of all, the music companies love it because you can't steal, right? So you never own the music. It's a better, from an economic point of view, it's $3 a month for Groove Shark Unlimited. So it's economically, it's much, much cheaper. You don't have to use scarce storage on the phone. And even if you've got 32 gigs in your phone, which I do, you might say, oh, gosh, I wish I had that album. Well, I don't.
Right.
I like the idea of paying a monthly fee and just kind of having access to the full, whatever it is, 5 or 6 million title library that's now out there. Everything but Prince, apparently. Did you see that?
Yeah, I don't know what that was about.
So Prince is putting out his new CD 2010. I think it's this week or next. He did this last time. You can get it in a newspaper in England. I think it's the Mirror, right, Jeff, in England?
I think so, yes.
Rolling Stone, Germany. You know, so they're going to like glue it to the front of a page, a CD. But he says, but I'm not going to put it on the internet. I'm not going to put it on iTunes because they don't give me an advance, which I don't get. They won't give me an advance. And the internet is a fad. And it's like MTV.
Takes one to know one.
Yeah, really. It used to be hip, he says, and now it's not anymore. But this is my favorite line. The internet fills your head with numbers, and that can't be good. What?
What's his head been filled with?
It almost feels like a put-on, and yet...
I know. His whole life does.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe he just... I don't know.
Maybe he's kind of the singing Andy Kaufman.
It's kind of like that, because it makes no sense. And surely he knows, as we all know, that if you put out the CD for free on a newspaper, in 3 seconds, it's going to be on the internet for free, everywhere.
Yes.
Right.
So you are putting it on the internet, in effect, and by not making it available anywhere in the U.S. online, you're guaranteeing it'll be online for free. You won't make any money. Forget the advance. You won't make a dime. It's all publicity. I think he's brilliant. I think.
Yeah. He is.
Yeah, he is.
I think he. Well, but I would say that this is a put on. But then remember, he sued people who put his music on YouTube. So he's not that silly. I don't know. He seems like the kind of guy that would only put out his records on plastic. Like CDs will fill your head with numbers. That can't be good. So we're going to go back to vinyl. That's what I want you to do, Prince. Listen carefully.
I love curmudgeons.
Yeah, you know, he's a curmudgeon.
in my research for the publicness book, my favorite thing is that privacy didn't really come up as an issue in American law until 1890.
Really?
The reason was technology.
Well, that's interesting.
Back camera.
That was the camera that started this.
Right. And so I looked at a bunch of really great old New York Times clips, and they were called Kodakers and Kodak Fiends. No good would come of this.
You're a Kodak fiend. I love
Kodakers
it.
Were lying in wait for J.P. Morgan. They're just great stuff.
See, this has always happened, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Every always. Step of the way. Mm-hmm. All it takes is a little sense or knowledge of history, and you realize this is exactly what it's always been like. People have always been uncomfortable with these steps forward in technology.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, we talked about Prince. I guess if you talk about Prince, can Justin Bieber be far behind? So what is the story with this YouTube Justin Bieber hack attack, Gina?
You know, I'm too old for Justin Bieber.
Everybody's too old for Justin Bieber.
Oh, come on. You think he's cute.
He is kind of cute.
Uh-oh.
He is kind of cute.
Well, he's, what, 16? What? He's a kid, right?
He's not of legal age, so I'm not going to say.
Well, and I think most of the resentment of Justin Bieber has to do with the fact that you can't get away from him.
Yes.
He's on YouTube. He's on Twitter. He's like a trending topic forever.
Yeah, he's been a sort of fixture of the trending topics. So there are a couple of Bieber stories that kind of came into my peripheral vision this week, right? There was something on Boing Boing that Jenny twittered about him having a tour North Korea or something.
Yeah, this was a hoax that was posted. So did Jenny start that?
She definitely wrote about it. And then the other one was the YouTube. Oh, so this is the same story.
Yeah. I guess it was Boing Boing that started, or Jenny Jardin started it. There was a website saying, where should Justin Bieber go next? And this sounds like the kind of thing, frankly, that 4chan would do. 650,000 votes for North Korea. it was 4chan. It was 4chan.
It was 4chan.
Cool. That's the only people who have that kind of clout. I mean, Boing Boing's great, but 650,000 votes. And now the YouTube hacking happened early in July. Justin Bieber videos were the target for hackers, redirecting users to adult websites or triggering a pop-up message saying that he had died in a car crash.
Oh, God. That's one way to create hysteria.
Jeez. Now, that was a cross-site scripting vulnerability that was fixed by Google. So that was a vulnerability.
Now, is that a shocking vulnerability?
Yes.
That was possible?
Well, this XSS vulnerabilities are common, but they require a flaw in... is it in the CSS or is it in JavaScript, isn't it, Gina? I think it's a JavaScript.
Yeah, so this is interesting. I mean, if Google fixed it on YouTube's side, then it sounds like maybe YouTube wasn't escaping. You know, they were able to get in HTML and JavaScript inside the comment, right?
Right.
And that shouldn't have been able to. That shouldn't have gotten into the comment, right? So, but usually XSS flaws are like browser specific flaws, where the browser's security model fails, where like one tab can play havoc with another tab.
I get it, but it was a problem in Chrome, I believe, briefly.
Yeah, so this is interesting. So they probably rolled out something to YouTube which disallowed that, you know, client-side code to get posted in the comments. Interesting. I would love to know what the details of this is. This is a more interesting story than I thought. I heard Justin Bieber and I was just like,
Yeah, stop reading. All right, I've gone to Wikipedia. Yeah. There are two kinds of XSS cross-site scripting flaws, persistent and non-persistent. Non-persistent is the most common type. The holes show up when the data provided by a web client, most commonly in HTTP query parameters or an HTML form submission, so it would be YouTube's problem, is used immediately by a server-side script to generate a page of results for that user without a sanitized response. So an error in their scripting would allow a unsanitized response to cause a problem.
Right, so you can cause the YouTube page to do something that it wasn't supposed to do, like redirect you to an adult site or have a pop-up saying he died in a car crash just by submitting certain bits of HTML and JavaScript.
And that normally only happens, you know, per session basis. A persistent one, somehow the server saves that data and then continue. And apparently, this is what happened on YouTube, and it continues to be served up. So that would be not so good. All right. So these things happen. Google fixed it.
So
is
that
the
kind of thing that a geek just comes along and happens to discover, and then says, "What should I do with this?"
Bad guys.
Justin Bieber.
Bad guys are throwing unsanitized responses at anywhere that you can enter data. You can guarantee that there's a cadre of hackers going, let's see what happens when I do this. Let's see what they even have engines that do it automatically, just feed it garbage, hoping to find these flaws. But everybody's Facebook's had this problem. MySpace has had this problem. Microsoft SharePoint has had this problem. Google has had the problem in the search engine as well as on YouTube. A bug in YouTube allowed attackers to create, this is from Security Watch, PC Magazine, allowed attackers to create malicious pages by putting cross-site scripting attacks in the comments. Attacks were widespread yesterday, according to Sunbelt Software, mostly spreading claims about Justin Bieber and messing with the comment feature. Another popular hack was scrolling text inviting readers to Korea. it's not a virus. It's just a flaw in the form software that allows that to happen. It's kind of embarrassing, though.
That is a little embarrassing.
Yeah. Oops.
I don't know how hard it is to prevent. Speaking of YouTube, a very interesting plan to crowdsource a documentary.
This is really interesting.
What do you think of this, Jeff? Tell us about it.
Ridley Scott is going to make one of those day in the life things. There are those wonderful books that come out, and he's going to make one on video. And I think it is on July 24th, is it, Leo?
Yeah. A day in the life.
Day in the life. We can all contribute our video of our day. I'm thinking we should just do a podcast that day.
We could upload Twig. Yeah.
And then he's going to make a documentary out of it. God knows what'll come of it.
They're going to show it at Sundance.
If your video is used, you get co-director credit.
So they say as many as 20 people will be flown to Sundance as co-directors. So when you read the articles, it says things like people brushing their teeth. So it's supposed to be like daily kind of normal activities, a day in the life.
Yeah, and I think we'll find people, who live unusual days, and so we'll see that. And I don't know how he's going to put it together, but Paulo Coelho, the author who sold 100 million books,
The Alchemist,
a version of his witch book, and I'm forgetting what the title is suddenly, where the his readers created various scenes and characters, and he put it together as a movie.
The Witch of Portobello.
It was called I forget what the online was called. And I never saw the movie, but he was quite enthralled with doing this. And I like it because it kind of gives respect to this world of fiendish Kodakers out here.
I really like, I do like the ad. Paul is amazing. He's a guy we should get on. I mean, he's a guy who's really discovered that the internet can be a huge boon for his business.
He'd do it. Paolo? We could get him on. He's wonderful.
Yeah.
Very, very nice.
Fascinating
guy.
Story. Oh, you know him.
Yeah. Of course. Yeah. This is going to be really obnoxious. I'm going to get crap for this. I met him at Davos.
Oh, well, there you go. Of course you did.
He's made more by being a pirate than anything else. And he loves this world. He got caught by his editor at HarperCollins because he said, somebody pirated me. What can I do? And they looked at it and they said, Paolo, the editor's version. It was your version.
You did it. You did it, Paolo. But the book, Alchemist was not selling, and it sold like crazy, and it took off, and it became a huge international bestseller because of that.
And he notices when somebody does a pirated version in another country in another language, it leads to sales there. It's so it's Cory Doctorow, just like it,
right? Yeah, it's counterintuitive, but there's so much empirical evidence now that it works that I think we should just accept that it does.
Right. So he went to the next step of saying, let's make something together. You have people like Coelho and Ridley Scott who are big guys who are now wanting to collaborate with the public.
Right.
I at an advertising event in New York a few weeks ago, I interviewed the creator of Heroes. He had the problem with TV is it takes 6 weeks lifetime or more. But he's trying to find new ways to collaborate with the public, even in those artistic and creative ventures, even in a fictional show.
So what would you do? Are we going to do this? Are we going to, July 24th, we're going to submit our, you have a few days after the 24th to submit it. I figure I'll use the iPhone and iMovie, and I'll make, I don't know what I would do. I mean, is it?
Maybe the three of us should get on.
We should do something.
And do something together.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be fun.
We could all brush our teeth.
I want my video to be of me Google searching where I can fly in the next 7 hours.
Yes. And then getting on and getting
and
on the flight.
And packing my bags and going off
on the 24th, you have to go somewhere.
I'll foot the bill, Gina. I'll foot the bill. I'll pay the ticket.
I'll just fly somewhere random.
And just because Gina, I can. Gina's going to fly somewhere random and film it.
Gina's in West Covina.
I love it. Yeah, it might be a short flight.
Good.
I think that's a great idea.
I'm going to do a sped up screencast of everything that happens on my computer desktop for an entire day in 30 seconds.
That's a good idea. Oh, don't give away all your good ideas. That's a good one. I like that.
I'm hoping someone else will do it because I'm too lazy.
You don't have to do it. Yeah.
It's good to give away my ideas.
We did, we recently, you probably noticed it looks a little brighter in here. We just, we had a, Kelly came in with his allinonetruck.com and he relit the whole studio and put a new lighting rig up and stuff. And, John Slanina, our studio manager, put his time-lapse camera up there in one day, and it was a shot every minute, I think.
Oh, sweet. So is that published somewhere?
We're going to publish it.
Cool.
But that would be perfect for that, because it was and all this cool stuff going on.
Are you in the cottage both weekend days always?
Yeah. Yeah, I am always here.
I saw your panoramic shot from behind the microphone, and it was fascinating seeing the other side.
See the whole thing. I know. I'll do that again. Actually, I have the one before the change, and I should do a before and after.
Is this why your bandwidth went wonky today? Or
no? Actually, it is. Oh, actually, you know what? Well, we don't know why. We something really bad happened to Skype. This is kind of embarrassing, but we had to stop the podcasts earlier today, and we'd been having problems for a couple of days. And you're right, it did. It all started when we rewired and relit the studio, so it's something to do with that. But so we pay $700 a month in the studio for a very high quality kind of T1 like thing called Ethernet to the First Mile, and it's supposed to be rock solid, super good. And we don't know if it's our end or their end, or we don't know what's wrong. But $700. So today. All of our Skype is courtesy of a Comcast cable modem, and it's better.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Wow.
Calling Comcast Cares. I guess I should probably tweet. I tweet all the negatives. I should probably tweet the positive.
Yeah, you should.
Give them a little credit.
Tweet that right now.
Yeah, and we're still having trouble on the stream, which is still on the EFM. So I think we're going to put everything on Comcast, and I'm going to save $700 a month. All right, I want to talk about a petition that is going on in just a little bit. A petition to change Google Voice for the better. And a petition we want to support. But before I do, I got to tell you, speaking of bandwidth, about Slingbox. Do you use a Slingbox, Gina? It seems like you should be using a Slingbox.
I'm very close to purchasing a Slingbox.
You got to get one.
They're one of our sponsors, especially. I've been thinking about it for quite some time. I want to do that East Coast, West Coast thing.
Yeah, that's why I thought you'd want to do that.
Yeah, I do.
We'll send you one.
Jake stole mine.
Ooh.
Jake stole yours? He took it to college?
He's going to try to use it there, so I've got to get a second Slingbox now.
Yeah, see? Everybody has a Slingbox. Slingbox is awesome. I will send you the Slingbox HD, Gina, because that's high quality. So what you do is you get the Slingbox. You get them at Best Buy or Slingbox.com. And so you get the Slingbox. You connect your television setup at home. So your DVR goes into it. Your DVD can go into it. Any antenna, anything you've got. It's got multiple connections. I wish I had one here. I would have one here, except it's connected to my house. But I will get another one so I can show you. So you connect that, and then you connect your Ethernet to that. So now it's online, and what it does is it puts your whole television setup online, and they have applications for Android. In fact, people tell me that the Android app is the best app of them all. Of course, iPhones, iPod Touches, you have to be on Wi-Fi for that, obviously. But it does work on 3G on the iPhone. That was a big deal when they got AT&T to agree to that. Blackberries. So, of course, your laptops, Windows or Mac. So anywhere you are on these devices, you enter the password and it logs you into your Slingbox at home. You can control the DVR. You can play back. You can watch what's on your TV. So it's like you have access to your TV setup anywhere on the road. Quality's really good. It depends, of course, on your internet connection. But you never, have to miss, stuff that's local in the San Diego market. If you're in New York or it's sports, people love it. In fact, it'd be great. And I've been meaning to do this. to take it to a ball game and then watch the instant replay on the ball game. It'd be awesome. You basically, anything that you watch at home, sports, news, movies, any other program type, you can watch on your iPhone, your iPod Touch with Wi-Fi, your BlackBerry, your laptop, your MacBook, and yes, your Android phones. I love it. I don't have my Nexus One here. I will next week, I will show you on the Nexus One. You can find an in-store demo at a Best Buy near you. Just go to slingbox.com and you'll find one nearby. And we love Slingbox. I think you're going to like Slingbox a lot. It's kind of the geek thing. We should get you another one too, Jeff. I'll call Slingbox.
You know, especially when I'm in Europe, the weirdest thing is when I stay in a hotel in, let's say, London, I think that the cable deal, they must pay the licensing or something. You get three or four really crappy channels and then 10 Arabic channels, and that's it.
You got to stop going to those hotels favored by the Arab world.
No,
seriously, because I go to a hotel in San Francisco sometimes, and it's all Japanese channels. And you, what it means is they have a lot of Japanese clientele. Because, you know, they provide the channels that that they want to watch. And apparently you're the only American.
I think I am, yeah. I only go on expense accounts. I can't afford it.
Really, no kidding. Slingbox.com. So this petition, by the way, we said it, and we should say it again. If you don't have a Google Voice account, go and get one. Because it's open to the world now. Everybody can have one.
Well, in the U.S., yeah.
I'm sorry, did I say the world? The U.S.
I got in big trouble for that. So
you're right.
Just watching out for you.
You're right. Because, you know, a third of our audience is outside the U.S., so a third of you cannot get this. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what the
Bonjour.
Best...
Bonjour. Guten Tag.
Yeah. You should do this show in German because we have a huge German audience. A lot of Scandinavians, a lot of Brits, Canadians, Australians. It's, you know, it's the nature of the internet broadcasting is not national. And that throws everybody, including all of our advertisers, for a loop. And us, right? Because we'll say, go out and get Google Voice. And they, no, can't. Stop telling me about it.
I didn't realize what a big fat American I was until I started writing online.
It's very, yeah, exactly. It's really good for us to remind us we are not the only ones.
We are not the only ones.
Well, if you live in the U.S., do get Google Voice because it's really a great, and if you have, in fact, it's like I said at the beginning of the show, this is the reason you use an Android phone. It becomes your voicemail on your Android phone. It's so much better. I know people love the Apple visual voicemail. I like the, I really prefer it because I can get texts. I get the emails. I can listen. I mean, it's just better all around. Yeah. Anyway, so what is this this petition to do something different on Google Voice?
Well, to make a desktop app because it's become religion in Google, accordingly to the founders, that they will only do browser apps. And now you have people saying, no, it's not good enough. Browser's not ready. We want a Google Voice desktop app.
Well, the problem comes from the fact that they acquired Gizmo and promptly killed the Gizmo app.
Right.
And that was a great app. It was a SIP phone that you could use. There are other apps out there, but I thought Gizmo was the best of them all. So they already have the app. It's almost like just release it.
Yeah. It's really interesting. It's really a very kind of hard stand. You know that their platform is the browser, and they want to stick to it. But you know, Google has some desktop apps, Picasa, right? I mean, there are some installable Google desktop.
That's a good point. Google Earth.
Google Earth, Google Desktop, Picasa. What are some others?
Don't kill Google Earth. I'd be furious.
Yeah. I mean, there are some apps that just, you know, work better on the desktop.
But what happens if you go to a Chromium world and the Chrome browser as operating system?
Right.
Are they going to have apps that won't work then?
Oh.
So they're for once they're thinking ahead in that way. But I think what's really cool here is the opportunity for Google to be the anti-Apple. No one would ever think of telling Steve what to do, ever.
Right.
And, but thousands are ganging up to think, well, Google might listen to us.
I think they should.
Google should listen.
Yeah, I think they should. If there's a demand for it, why not?
Yeah.
I feel like Google's had been really good about having this about showing that they listen and having this sort of continual conversation with users.
Right.
You know, unlike the sort of letter from Steve Jobs on high, it seems like Google's been doing especially a good job in the past couple of years of blogging and responding and changing things when they didn't work. You know, when the background images rolled out, they pulled them back immediately. I mean, you know,
you can do it.
But you opt in, right? So
it looks so much like Bing, but I actually did it.
And so some of the images are really
they're
striking.
Beautiful. I kind of like having an image on my Google. See, I've got the, I don't know what, that's the Casbah or something. I don't know what that is. But it looks so much like Bing.
Yeah, it does.
Unlike Bing, though, Bing, it changes every day. On this, you can't. You have to change it by hand, which I think is not good. I mean, it's pretty, and I can remove it. Mm-hmm. And then you click change background image, and then they give you some choices. But you could do it from your own photos. There's some really pretty images.
I don't see why they wouldn't just have a desktop app and a browser-based Google Voice, VoIP app. You know, all their desktop apps have sort of web counterparts, right? So like Google Earth is Google Maps, Picasa is Picasa Web. Even Google Desktop kind of integrates web search results with your desktop search results. I don't see why they couldn't do both, especially like you said, Leo, they have the app, right? They have the Gizmo app.
Right.
It would just be a matter of rebranding it.
Have you seen this Chrome fastball game? Did we talk about this last week?
We did. It was down when we tried it.
Is it back up?
I hadn't tried it since we...
We couldn't try it before. This is because they build Flash now. Yes, it's up! They build Flash now into the browser. It comes with Chrome now.
Mm-hmm. So what am I supposed to do?
What's going on? What? Help. Help. What am I supposed to do? Is it just doing it? Am I supposed to click on anything? Oh, I see. Choose the fastest mode of transportation between point A and point B. A straight line? I don't know. Huh? Bicycle. Biking. 5 minutes. Get there faster. Car. Okay. 4 minutes. Yes, that's it. Chrome fast. Okay. That's kind of a stupid game.
Yeah.
Okay. What's happening? I don't know what the hell's happening. Tweet the fastest ball you can think of. Cheetah ball. Cheetah ball. Okay. That's the fastest ball. Now, what is this tweeting? It's not a ball I recognize. Fastball.
That's a bit obscene there.
Fastball. Fastball. Okay, there. I'm tweeting it. That speed depends on you, my friend. We'll give you an average speed this time. That's an average ball penalty of 5 tweets. I don't even know what's going on. Go. Oh, jeez. Have you played this yet?
I haven't, but now I'm scared.
It's what? Okay. Translate text. Translate that. That looks like it's in, I'm going to say Hungarian. Hungarian. Translate it into English. Translate. No, close, but try again with fewer options.
If you get everything right, you get a job at Google.
It's Finnish. It's Finnish. That's it. I think the ball was lost in translation. Oh, jeez. Icelandic. It's close. I know. It's making me crazy. It says a ball in motion will stay in motion. Do you think it's different every time? Or?
I don't get it.
I don't get it either. It's very postmodern, Jeff. Choose an artist. Selected artist. Bridge. What? Help the ball by spelling bridge out of band names. Beatles. You guys aren't helping me at all. Rihanna.
Other services.
Artist. Iggy Pop. artist.
Daba.
Daba? No, but.
Abba.
D. It has to begin with a D.
Oh, D. I thought it was Rihanna. Oh, sorry.
No. D. Danger Mouse.
Doors. Danger Mouse.
Danger Mouse. Okay, Doors. That was better. Okay, G.
Gorillas
with a Z. Oh, did I spell it wrong? Oh, two L's.
Yeah, two L's and a Z.
Okay, and finally, an artist that begins with an E.
Elton John.
Enya.
This is very revealing.
It is. It's way too revealing. I hope they don't collate this information. So my time is two. Wait a minute, there's more. Search for three things that have decreasing search results. Jeff Jarvis. Okay. Leo Laporte. Yes, so far so good. Okay, who's less than us? Jeff.
Jason Calacanis.
There you go. There you go. I like your thinking. And we win. There's 3 minutes and 25 seconds of your life you'll never get back.
As they used to say on David Letterman, network time wasters.
My final time, hey, I was pretty good. I ranked 11,853 out of 39,449 players. So, and
that's
they give you
proud
the record time on the tour to Twitter is 5 seconds, map lap 6 seconds. But see, I think next time I'll do better.
Next time you'll be way faster because you've got it down now.
I didn't even know what the rules were at first. I couldn't figure out what the hell I was doing. I'm amazed I finished.
Like incorporated all these other services, you know, like Twitter and Last.fm. You know, these are their competitors essentially, and they're promoting them. I think that's great.
Yeah. Well, what my initial concern with Twitter is, I thought that I would be tweeting whatever I said.
Yeah,
it wasn't clear, so it's just a phony Twitter. It was fun. I liked that. All right, so am I going to be the guinea pig and get a droid? I guess I am. Droid X.
Droid X. I'm sticking my N1 for now.
It was nice.
Do you like the ad that says, if you've seen the ad that has, it says double antenna, hold it any way you want? You got to like that.
The problem is it's not going to have 2.2. You revert pre-Froyo.
2.1, I think, yeah. Although, and this really gets me. So I see the article that says, no, we'll definitely be getting 2.2. But they don't say when or, you know, I mean, it could be next year.
Yeah, a little more information would be good.
What's so hard about it?
Go ahead, Leo.
No, I just started the Android book. You probably read more of it than I have.
I mean, I assume it's just because they customize, different carriers customize the OS.
That's what I
in
think.
Different ways. Yeah. So there's like the distribution, but there's also the customization part of it. And I assume it's the customization part of it that just takes a little time.
Actually, I'm going to correct myself. In the ad, it says Android 2.2 and Adobe Flash, which comes with 2.2. Late summer over-the-air update.
Oh, late summer.
That's not so bad.
That's
like next month.
We've been talking about Froyo for a long time, but it just got open sourced like last week, right?
Right.
So the carriers basically are just sort of getting their hands on it now.
8-megapixel camera, mobile hotspot over Verizon.
See, if I keep two phones, I wonder whether I should have Android on Verizon as one of them.
Yeah,
keep my iPhone.
Yep.
Use it in Europe.
Yep. I have to have GSM. So I'm going to have to keep either the Nexus One or the iPhone because I got to have GSM. I think this Droid X looks pretty hot. I'll be the guinea pig. July 15th.
Clayton thought it was too big, but I liked the size of it.
Well, did he think the Evo was too big? It's roughly the same size as the Evo, which I didn't.
Is it? Oh, okay.
Gina said the perfect thing. She said what did you say? It's almost too big.
It's almost too big. It's right on the edge of being too big. Yeah. Yeah, not quite there.
Almost
one
too big.
One more millimeter, and I would have been too big.
Yeah. So I like it.
Well, when you get the whatever that Dell thing is called at 5 inches.
That's intriguing.
That's markedly bigger.
Well, yeah.
Said it's like holding a waffle up your head.
And that's going to be like a tablet, a waffle.
Yeah, that's basically going to be a tablet, right? I mean.
Yeah, you're going to use Bluetooth and you're not going to hold it to your head, which is probably a good idea.
I had my first kind of longing for a tablet this weekend reading Clay Shirky's new book in the Kindle app for Android, which is great. I love it. And in fact, if you with the Kindle app for Android, if you change the background to black and the type is white, it really is almost as good as the e-ink. You know, it's not as hard on your eyes. You still get the glare.
Well, that's good to know.
The actual Kindle, but
and on the OLED screens, that would be the most efficient energy used too, because black uses no energy.
I prefer a darker background. I always change all my text editors to have a dark background and light type anyway. But yeah, I really thought to myself, like, wow, I want an Android tablet. It was the first time that I really felt myself, you know, wanting a tablet.
I guess Germany is out of the World Cup, Jeff. Is that bad?
Yes, they are. Spain's in.
Yeah. Spain and Netherlands. I don't know why I said that. I just thought I'd throw that in. I know why, because I want to play the Vuvuzela one more time before we... It's my last chance. My last chance.
When is the final?
Final on Sunday.
This
right during
sweat.
My radio show.
Ah.
Oh, well. What the hell? So the Cisco tablet... how do you pronounce this one? C-I-U-S. Cius? 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 If it's James Bond, Money Penny, give me my Cius.
That doesn't bode well that you're not. It's not immediately obviously how to spell
C-I-U-S. I don't know.
Say
Sius. From Cisco, so it's got to be the Sius. Oh, I get it. You see us. So it's not as, it's only 7 inches. So it's not as big as the iPad. No. It will run Android. It is pronounced see us. Some of the Cisco apps like WebEx and Telepresence will be built in. But Android developers will be encouraged to develop for it using Cisco's own SDK and API. Not good. 8-hour battery life, according to Cisco. Firefox integrated. This is not an Android experience, really, is it?
Oh.
And it's running on an Atom, an Intel Atom processor.
Wait a second.
1.14.
Firefox running on it?
On an Atom, that's okay. Firefox can run on an Atom.
Why would they do it? That's what Jay is asking.
But why? Why not use Chrome? You got WebKit. It's built in.
Well, you know, these corporate clients, they could be, I have all my plugins.
That's what it is. You're right, Jeff.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely what it is. So this is really, I think this is a corporate device.
Well, that's what it is.
Yep.
That's the entire use. I think it's more expensive, too. It's going to be higher margin.
It, in fact, docks into a Cisco phone, which is kind of interesting.
Is that cool? Yeah, that's kind of cool.
This, what this is, shows the strength of the Android strategy because it's license and royalty free. So a company like Cisco is encouraged, if they're going to develop something like this that is you know, kind of a purpose-built device. It's not a general mass-market device. It's a purpose-built device. But why not use Android? It's free. And you get all the benefit. And you can say to developers, yeah, you have to use our SDK and API, but it is still Android. So you kind of know how to develop for this.
Yeah.
I think this is really the strength of Google's strategy here. You'd never see iOS on this. The license feed
wouldn't be allowed.
You'd be shot. That's right. You couldn't do it, could you? So there's a. I think we're going to start. That's the first enough. Sure.
Yeah, I think we're going to see lots and lots of applications of the ability. I saw that Google. I didn't put this in the chat room, but Google incorporated Google Checkout into Android for some devices. So just as the Apple guys are using the iPhone store, imagine if people in retail stores all over can use Android phones, and doctors can use Android tablets, and so on and so forth. There'll be a lot of special use things.
Perfect. All right, we're going to end with the joke of the week that one of our friend feed posters sent to us from zany.com, xayni.com. It is an iPhone case that solves the problem of how to hold it. It's got a telephone handset on the back. I've also seen one, a mannequin hand that has an, you put it in the mannequin hand and then you hold it on a rod. All right, we had to rub it in just a little bit. Time.
You know, speaking of Android, there's a really cool Kickstarter project that I wanted to plug really quickly.
Good, yes.
This developer called Danny Peer in Denver, Colorado, wants to build an Android app that will take photos and also use the GPS capability, and he wants to attach an Android device to a weather balloon and send it up and try to get pictures of the Earth. And there's, you know, there was this Brit back earlier this year, you know, used some duct tape and a camera and a GPS and some weather balloons and got some incredible pictures from the sky. So Danny wants to make this project. He wants to use an Android device to do this, and he wants to build an Android app to do this. And he's raising $2,000 just to buy, you know, weather balloons and devices that you can throw up and see what happens. And depending on how much you pledge, you can get a photo, or, you know, a print of the photo that the device takes, or you can get the app itself. And he's trying to raise $1,800, and he's at like 1,000, and he's got 4 more days left. So, to raise the money. So it's on Kickstarter. I also linked it on our friend feed. I think it's a cool project. Those photos that Robert Harrison got earlier in the year were amazing, and I would love to try this out myself. And maybe if Danny raises the money and gets to do it, we will be able to do that. So check
one.
It out.
Yeah,
we could build one.
What's the minimum donation you can make on Kickstarter? Is it a buck?
It's five. I think that each project sets it, but it's $5 for this particular project.
Fair enough.
So if you get pledge $5, you get your name credited. If you $10 or more, you get a print. And if you pledge $50 or more, you actually get a copy of the app so you can do it yourself. And and I think $150 or more, he'll give you the 8x10 photo, he's calling it Asteroid, which is the name of the project, the app, a weather balloon, recovery parachute, and all the material that you'll need to kind of replicate the flight yourself. So it seems like a really cool project, and Danny's been, and his friends have been bugging me for a couple weeks to bring it up. So I pledged $50, so check it out. I'm hoping that he's going to make his goal.
Do you? It's time for Gina's tip, and I don't know if the your top article on Smarterware is your tip.
Oh, you know, it isn't, and I probably should have.
We should mention this then.
Yeah, yeah, let's talk about it real quick. Somebody emailed me. You know, we've talked about this Google Apps versus Google Accounts disparity for a while. Google Accounts get access to a lot of products like Voice and Google Reader that Google Apps accounts don't yet. So, and we talked about just last week. Google wants to kind of bring parity, where give Google Apps users the access to the same number of products that regular Google accounts get. And there's a trusted tester program going on right now. I'm not a part of it, but a listener is and emailed me about it. And so basically, Google Apps accounts are going to get access to all those other products, which is awesome, like Voice and Reader. I think Voice is on apps now, but Reader and Analytics and all that stuff. And you're going to be able to... If you have a Google account and a Google Apps account, which are tied to the same email address, they're going to resolve the conflict by adding a plus personal.
This is brilliant.
Google account. Yeah, to your Google account address. It's brilliant. It's a little confusing. I posted this on my blog and I got a lot of people in the comments saying, wait, what now? what happens to what account?
I am Laporte@gmail.com. That's my personal account. And let's say we have leo@twit.com as a Google Apps account. So it will going forward be leo+personal@twit.com.
Well, with Google accounts, you can associate any email address you want, right? So your Gmail address, there won't be a conflict, right? Because your Google Apps account is at some other domain. The Gmail address isn't the problem. But if you associated like leo@twit.com with your Google account,
right,
and you also had a Google Apps account, which was leo@twit.com,
right,
then there'd be a conflict, right? Then you'd have two Google accounts with the same address.
Right.
And to resolve that conflict, they're going to add the plus personal. To the Google account.
Google account, not the apps account. So the Google account becomes leo+personal@twit.com, and the Google account is leo@twit.com.
Right.
Got it.
So the bad news is you can't, like, there's no one-click merge. You can't say, these are both my accounts, now just merge all my data. There was no talk of that in any of the help pages. But, you know, looking through all these different products, I mean, it's you could export... You know, and pretty much all of them except Google Voice. Google Voice is the only one. You know, with Google Voice, you have a phone number, obviously, associated with your account. So how do you port that phone number over? Right now, you can submit a request to port a Google Voice number from one Google account to another. There's a spreadsheet. There's a request spreadsheet. You can't transfer it to a Google Apps account, but I'm hoping that they're going to offer that when this happens. So there's going to be a little data, you know, import-export action when this does happen. If you want to move completely to Google Apps, which I'm definitely going to do because I'm tired of juggling... You know, both accounts.
Yeah, we're about to corporately. We've been using the free Google Apps, and we're about to move to Google, the full Google Apps. We were using Google Docs. We're going to move to Google Apps, I think, for all of Twit. It just seems like a sensible way to go, especially now that I can still log in with my, or I soon will be able to log in with my personal account.
Mm-hmm. Gina, I'm confused, but I'll wait till it happens.
It's a little confusing. We'll talk about it when it rolls out. It is a little confusing.
We need a whiteboard here.
Well, there is on her website. If you look at her website,
it's a multicolored whiteboard.
Yeah, it's a red, yellow, and green.
It's confusing. The upshot is you will be able to have just a Google Apps account and do everything,
right?
Which is kind of the goal.
You can continue to use your personal Gmail account by adding plus personal to your apps account. Oh, never mind.
No.
Gina, what's your tip of the week? I just confused myself.
It's a little confusing. We will explain when it comes out of trusted tester.
If you hear me.
Uh-oh. Jeff disappeared.
We lost Jeff.
From the face of the earth. I'll call him back while you give us your tip of the week, and then we'll get his
All
number.
All right. I will. Nexus One folks who have Froyo and who also use Chrome can use this new cool new app called Chrome to Phone. It's a Chrome extension and a Firefox extension. You install it and Leo, I hope I didn't steal your tool.
Nope.
Okay, good. when you install Chrome to Phone on your Chrome browser or your Firefox browser, you get a little button in the toolbar and you hit the button and say send a phone. It will send all your open tabs to your Android. It's just Froyo 2.2. And also there's a phone component. So you have to install the Chrome to Phone Android application as well and register your device, right? So you're just telling, you're telling Google, this is my phone, this is my Chrome browser. It links those two. And so, you know, if you're packing up your browser for the night and going home and you got a few open tabs you didn't get a chance to look at, you hit the button, sends those tabs to your phone. And when you get home, or when you're on the train, you'll get all those tabs on your phone. It's pretty neat. And you get a little notification that says Chrome sent your tabs, you know, on your phone. So,
you need the Chrome extension on your Chrome, which is a CRX file. And
right.
Then you download the APK file on your phone.
On your phone.
And then you can click on the extension.
And, right. And you click on the extension, you sign in your Google account, and on your phone, you tap the application to register your device. Right. And those are one-time deals. And then once you do that, you can hit that send my tabs to phone. And it works with Firefox, too. There's a Firefox extension.
I love it. Yeah, I did it on my phone. I don't remember right away, I think, when I got Froyo on there.
Mm-hmm.
Really, that's a Froyo feature.
It's Froyo, yeah. Yeah,
cool?
It is Froyo specific.
That's so cool.
Well, not so cool for Droid users, but cool nonetheless.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, see, this is another reason to stay. So you get this little button on your Chrome, and you just click on it. Whoops, whoa, there it is. And it'll send those tabs. Of course, I have to log into my account. Cool. We can't get Jeff back, but I know what his number is. I wonder if I should keep trying or... I think that was... You know, it sounded like he was saying, if you lose me, I...
Yeah, it did sound like that a little bit.
Well, he gave us a number in our friend feed account, so I'll deliver his number for us, and we'll get Jeff back. His number of the week, -$5.3 billion. And this is the stock plunge over the last year, 30% loss, which means if you're Larry Page, you lost $5.3 billion. If you're Sergey Brin, you lost $5.2 billion. If you're Eric Schmidt, you lost $1.7 billion in the value of the shares you hold.
Peanuts.
Peanuts, it's nothing. But 58.
Eat that for breakfast.
Why? Why? And I wish Jeff were here because I'm curious why you think the Google stock over the last 7 months has plunged 30%. Seems like Google should be stronger and bigger and better than ever.
You would think so.
It's fallen for 13 consecutive trading sessions. It rallied on Wednesday. The stock had plunged so much, erasing. Boy, that's just amazing. That's a lot of money. My tip of the week is something that has been around for a while but has recently been upgraded. It is Google's mobile YouTube site, which is m.youtube.com. Now, of course, if you're on an iPhone, this isn't going to do you any good at all because the iPhone folks don't have Flash. But this works nicely on a Nexus 1 where we do have Flash. And it's designed for any phone. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe it does work on an iPhone. They're showing it with an iPhone. So you enter M. I guess it's smart enough to say, oh, it's an iPhone. I'll send you H.264. Look at that. So I take it back.
Yeah,
nice. M.youtube.com. They now have high quality. It plays back in QuickTime. And all the features, very nice, of YouTube improved. And a lot more videos in there as well. Of course, you have an YouTube application on Android and iPhone. But do you ever use that? I rarely use that.
Only when it launches, when I've hit a
right,
video.
Right.
Otherwise, but I generally don't launch it standalone.
This should make it possible not to worry about it. Jeff Jarvis is the blogger at buzzmachine.com. He's also the author of What Would Google Do? Which is available everywhere. And he's working on his new one, Public Parts, which will be out soon. He also is a professor of journalism at the City University of New York. And, I hope nothing bad happened to him.
His last words, if you can't hear me.
Gina Trapani, we shouldn't mock him. Gina Trapani, she's the author of The Complete Guide to Google Wave at CompleteWaveGuide.com. Also blogs at a must-read blog at SmarterWare.org. And Think Tank is her project that she's working on. It's been part of... the federal government's plans to get feedback from real people. It's a Twitter analyzer. Is that going to be public at some point? What's the...
And Facebook. Available to download. It's a self-hosted tool, right? Kind of like WordPress is. But we're hoping, like WordPress did at some point, you know, kind of make it you know, way down the road, make a hosted version available. But if you're a nerd, you can download the code and install it on your server. And the installer is on its way. The installer is three-step installer. It's looking really good. I'm going to merge that into the main code base soon. So it's going to be easy to install.
It worked for me. Oh, no, but I'm running your instance. That's why it worked so well for me. It's nice if you can run it off Gina's server. But only some of us get that privilege. Yeah, really.
You got good test data, Leo, you know.
Yeah, you wanted my tweets. What can I say? She loves me for my tweets. Thank you, Gina. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you all for watching. We do this show every Wednesday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern. We hope next week to have Rick Clow, who's the product manager for Google Profiles, on the show. So tune in for that 1 p.m. Pacific next Wednesday. And, of course, you can subscribe if you miss the show live. You can always watch it on YouTube. Our channel is youtube.com/twit. It'll work, by the way, on the mobile YouTube, I believe. You can also get it from iTunes, the Zoom Marketplace, everywhere finer podcasts are available in both audio and video. Or just go to twit.tv/twig. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.